Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
My bad. Am I good? Okay. Part two of your Ben Jarofsky show for Wednesday, July 1st, is brought to you in part by the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 9, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 150, and our good friends at the Chicago Federation of Labor. Benny J., take it away.
We've been talking about this interview all day. Vincent Normant, Chief Marketing Officer for Parkway Dispensary and the owner of the Marijuana Hall of Fame. Yes, the Marijuana Hall of Fame in Las Vegas, Nevada, that one day will have me in there enshrined if I have anything to do with it. Vincent Normant, welcome back to the show, sir.
Thanks for having me. Looking forward to inducting you into the Marijuana Hall of Fame.
Oh, my goodness. I cannot wait for that. All right, we have a lot of topics we want to talk about. I have a whole list of them. We're going to take them one by one. And we'll close with a brief discussion of the NBA. Folks may not know this, but Vincent Normant is a former athlete, big-time basketball fan, and worked in the marketing end of things in basketball-related industries. So he knows a thing or two about basketball. So we'll have a little basketball conversation. But we have many other topics to get to before we do that. So, Vincent, imagine my surprise. We had already arranged for this interview. I was looking forward to it. I had promoted on the show. I get my Sun Times home delivered, my beloved Bright One home delivered. I open it up, and what do I see on page 6 on, with a Tommy Shuba story? A picture of Vincent Normant with this super cool T-shirt on that looks like a marijuana leaf T-shirt. Right there.
It is the Marijuana Hall of Fame logo. And by the way, certified registered trademark. Thank you, Library of Congress.
So don't steal his idea, ladies and gentlemen. All right. And the headline is Another Pot Postponement. Good job by Tommy Shuba. Tom is one of the hardest working reporters in the city of Chicago. We give him a lot of love on the show and a nickname. Tommy too joined Shuba. We've talked about this the last time we were on the show, the delays that dispensaries are getting from the state in terms of the license to open up. More licenses delayed indefinitely due to COVID-19. Vincent, why don't you give us the update on what's going on?
Yeah, so, J.B. Christner, the governor, came out and signed an executive order to delay the process of craft grow indefinitely. And again, it's, you know, just another low blow to minorities who are trying to get the craft grow facilities up and running, made a huge financial commitment in obtaining rental space, either rent or just rent to own. And, ourselves, we spent over thousands of dollars. And so, it seems like that bill is going to continue to grow as we sit back and wait. And, it's just unacceptable.
In Tom Shuba's article, it says, Normant said he and his partners already shelled out more than $20,000 for a down payment on a proposed craft cultivation center in Broadview. Now the group will have to continue making monthly rent payments with no assurance it will get one of the coveted license. Talk a little bit more about that, Vincent.
Yeah, so, again, we're in the process, and I'm sure, other applicants as well are researching our potential dispensary locations to go along with, the craft grow, because we want to be fully integrated. So, part of that is drafting of architect plans, interviewing, and offering from our investors looking to invest in the cannabis industry. So we're right now seeking to raise, $1.2 million her dispensary. And so that tie in as well, you know, because that's going to be our, obviously our supplies and products coming from the crab grow industry into the dispensary. Until then, we'll have to depend on already established crab grow operating facilities here in the state of Illinois. One come to mind, maybe Cresco Lab or GTI, and there are other ones as well. So, again, it's just a huge, you know, mounting financial bill that's taking place. And so, you know, we're optimistic, you know, going to continue to move forward and just look at the system and put pressure on Springfield and the state to do the right thing.
Now, Vincent, the governor of the state says that the delay is caused by the COVID-19 outbreak, the pandemic. What's the correlation between the COVID-19 outbreak and the inability to issue licenses to dispensaries?
Well, you know, one of the things that I talked to Tom about when we were just having a conversation and interview for his article, you know, my thing was, I expected this. And the reason why is, if you think about it, in, you know, the governor just rolled back that they're going to be making an announcement for issuing out dispensary license in the month of July, which we're now entering July 1. And then also you're going to be able to issue out crab grow in that same month when it clearly has been a debacle over the last 3 months. It just didn't make sense. So this announcement from the governor did not come as a surprise to me, and I'm sure probably others. And so, you know, it's just like, again, you know, it was like expected, and it's now, you know, we need to really address this fully. And I encourage all of the applicants to really start being a voice to this, because the word indefinitely, that, you know, that in itself can be pushed all the way into the month of what, October, November. And then now we're talking about entering to the winter months. And clearly, you know, production and development and construction really goes down during that time.
Yeah, I didn't see a very specific explanation as to why the coronavirus pandemic is forcing this delay. You know what I'm saying? So I could see, like, well, the coronavirus pandemic is forcing us to delay opening up bars so people could where people will sit face to face, and there's an easy opportunity to transmit the disease. I can understand that. I just do not see the correlation between issuing a license and the pandemic. So, my first instinct, born by years, Vincent, I must admit this, of skepticism as to what government is up to, is that they just invented the pandemic as a reason to delay. Maybe I'm being unfair. If I'm being unfair to the state of Illinois, please correct me right now. Am I being unfair to the state of Illinois?
No, I agree. I don't think you've been unfair at all. You know, last time I was on the show, you know, I did mention that the powers to be, just like he signed an executive order to the delaying process, he could have signed an executive order to initiate some license immediately. Mm-hmm. How that would have played out, I'm not sure. You know, people talk about, well, if you do that, you know, then people are going to file a lawsuit. But here we go. We're in a delay. You know, I think people should be ready to up and running to file a lawsuit if necessary, because, again, this is holding us back. And let's just talk about, you know, the systematic system embedded, you know, just in legal cannabis, in the legal cannabis industry itself. You know, we look at, we point to the fact that there are no minority owned representation right now in the state of Illinois for craft grow or dispensary. And so this has already taken place years ago. And so, you know, even though, you know, the social equity thing is supposed to be a step in the right direction, and like I said, I was very optimistic about it, and I know my team as well. But now, you know, it's starting to be redundant with these delays and uncertainties. And COVID-19 is just an excuse. You know, it's it has nothing to do with nothing, especially in the fact that these dispensaries are making a lot of money during COVID-19. They haven't closed down. Production hasn't stopped. So, sound like something fishy there.
Yeah. Me. And I would urge the state to pick up the pace, because as I say this all the time on the show, whenever we do one of these interviews about marijuana, cannabis, reefer, whatever you want to call it, the whole point, as far as I'm concerned, of legalizing it was to eradicate the inequities that existed between the enforcement of the law. So as I always point out, black people would get arrested for doing something that white people did all the time. And so the whole point, as far as I'm concerned, maybe other people in the state of Illinois, Vincent, didn't see it as the point. But to me, the main reason to legalize marijuana is to just get rid of those inequities and those unfairnesses from the get-go. And so one way to, like a compensation, reparations, I called it reefer reparations, would be to have black-owned dispensaries. And lo and behold, we don't have them. So I cannot... There's two points I urge. Urge the state to hurry up and stop the delay and issue the licenses so black-owned operators get into business. And two, make it legal on a federal level. Okay? Because yes, your hands will be tied, Vincent, and you know this as well as anybody, by the fact that it's illegal at the federal level. That hurts you in terms of getting banks to, you know, set up accounts with you and get loans, et cetera, and so forth, and you still have to deal with the possibility that the drug enforcement people come down your throat. So there are some problems on the federal level as well.
Yes, you're right. You know, that's why I'd like the urgency, you know, right now. With, you know, there's a very small window, Ben, for getting the attention of these investors to come on board. And again, can you blame them? They're proceeding with caution, especially with all the chaos that's going on with the Illinois licensing, you know, being awarded from dispensary to craft grow now, being delayed. And so, you know, we're trying to keep the pace up and let the, you know, potential investors know that we're here. You know, we're still doing the work. We have our facility picked out in Broadview. And Broadview, Illinois. And so all these things are taking place. We're still up and running and working towards the process. Now we're just waiting on JB, which I campaigned hard for, you know, for governor. And I'm really, you know, like, man, do I need to pull my vote back? You know, but, you know, this is, you know, the onus is on him. He's a leader here in the state. And, you know, I know I'm going to be sending out some information in regard to that. The fact that we campaign for that, you know, do the right thing, or, you know, maybe you don't need a second term, you know. But the politics of dancing is, that's the way it is in Illinois. You know, anyone out there that's interested in investing in Parkway Dispensary, we would love for you to contact us. Again, we're out here doing the work. You know, if it's okay, Ben, you know, I'd like to, you know, give my email address, the company email address. They can email us if they're interested.
Go ahead.
Yes. So invest at parkway-dispensary.com. Invest at parkway-dispensary.com. Again, you know, we're here, you know, for the people of Illinois. We also understand, you know, our counterparts and our colleagues as well, that's advocates, that's trying to get their craft grow license, dispensary license as well, minority owned. And, you know, I think together we need to just get a petition going. You know, something has to get done.
I have, out of fairness, I must point this out before we move on, that J.B. Pritzker's opponent in the 2018 gubernatorial election was the sitting governor, Bruce Reiner, who was a strong opponent to legalizing marijuana. He was a strong opponent. So we wouldn't be where we are if Bruce Reiner was reelected. We made fun of him all the time, Vincent, for he went on some radio station in southern Illinois and said that legalizing marijuana, he would battle it to the very end. He was sticking to that one. And he was defeated. An overwhelming majority of people in the state of Illinois want marijuana legalized, and it was finally legalized. But come on, J.B. Pritzker. Let's get this dispensary license inequities taken care of. It also says in the article, Vincent, that Vincent Normant, a Englewood native who served in the U.S. Marines. I have forgotten you served in the Marines.
Hoorah. Hoorah for all my fellow Marines out there. Hoorah.
Hoorah. Semper Fi. So tell the story. How did you wind up in the Marines? What was the circumstances that led to that?
Well, you know, I received a scholarship in football, and you know how you want to you know, your award is something really good and great at that. And this was my free ride for education. But, you know, I was a good player, but my passion wasn't as much as me wanting to explore opportunities as an entrepreneur and just in general. So, but I went unluck has it, I broke my jaw in college. And it was a huge setback and gave me time to kind of reflect. And I said, you know, I'm going to take a different path. So I wrapped up a little of my time there at the university. And Marine recruiter was already recruiting me in high school. And so I gave him a call and I said, you know, right now I'm medically induced with a fractured jaw. But once it heals, you know, I'm thinking about joining the Marine Corps. And he was like, okay, let me get all your paperwork together. And, you know, and so a few months went by and I made the pledge. And that's how I ended up in the United States Marine Corps. I left college and went there.
And how many years were you in the Marines?
6 years.
6 years. Now,
6 years of service.
6 years of service. And so did you have an aversion to the type of training you received, or did you find yourself able to go along with it? In other words, are you the kind of person who just naturally rebels or resists people who tell you what to do, or are you the kind of person who felt comfortable with a very disciplined regimen?
I'm comfortable with a disciplined regimen as far as, especially being on a football team, you get that, you know, the coaches and the training and, you know, so forth. What I'm not comfortable with is the fact that when it's not the right training, the right discipline, you know, yes, I would question that in a heartbeat, you know, and that's just part of my entrepreneurial spirit and just the way I was brought up with my parents and stuff. So, you know, you can, you know, tell me to go this way, but, you know, explain it a little bit more in detail. And if it makes sense, then let's go. If it doesn't, I'm going to question it.
Is the Marines the type of institution where the trainers are in the habit of explaining things when asked to explain things? Or are they the type of people say, nobody asked for your opinion on anything, just shut up and do it?
The latter. You don't get that opportunity. You're in the Marine Corps, you know, and you think about it, you know, you really don't have time. If you're in combat and you say, let's attack that hill, you know, in a war situation, you have to attack that hill. You know, you really don't have time to be explaining to thousands of troops in the platoon, you know, what's the reason behind it. You know, everybody just got to have, faith in the leadership. And we got to go and, you know, serve our country. And we got to make it happen.
So
in that instance, you have to go.
So when the drill instructors were giving you orders, how did you resist the temptation to say, F you? You know, how did you get in the mindset not to fight back when you were getting those strict orders from your instructors?
Well, you know... If you, it's like me, you know, if I know that there's an issue with that order, you know, if I know that, then I'm sure the drill instructor knows that as well. And so, you know, I just raised the question, you know, and usually when there's some misinformation, usually the leadership kind of backtrack a little bit, so to speak. I challenge, you know, and question, and it's not, again, if it makes sense with a real explanation, then we go for it. If not, you know, I'll take the consequence that goes along with not following orders.
When as a Marine, as a person who went through 6 years of being in the Marines, did you have the reaction that some Marines had when Colin Kaepernick took the knee, that he was insulting the flag and the military?
Not at all. You know, and I truly believe, probably if you poll, you know, military servicemen, veterans, you probably get 80-85% easy that would have side with Colin Kaepernick. I know for myself, I clearly understand what the knee was all about. It was not disrespecting the flag. It was not disrespecting our country. This was just a, you know, curveball being thrown at the general public just to avoid addressing the issues. Police brutality and injustice that was going on throughout the U.S. And people just didn't want to address it. And a lot of times our white counterparts looked away because they just couldn't believe it. You know, when you're not in it, or you're not being chastised, or being followed, detained, then you tend to believe that this is not happening for real. So I was fully in support of, matter of fact, when I was in Atlanta, I took a knee in front of the stadium in solidarity of Kaepernick.
This was a few years ago when he was still playing?
This was like 2017.
Yeah. Wow, that's...
Yeah, he was on his way out. They had, you know, pretty much blackballed him. And so Roger Cadell is going to make the full apology, right?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, well, it is interesting things. We're going to get into that when we talk a little about the NBA and Adam Silver. We'll get into the whole, how sports is... some of the attitudes of the executives in the professional sports leagues have changed dramatically since the video of George Floyd was released, of him getting murdered. And I always make a point, Vincent, of saying it was the video. It was not the murder of George Floyd. It was the release of the video when people got to see it. That was the distinguishing point. Do you understand what I mean by that?
Exactly. You know, without the video, without the outcry, and clearly, we all saw the same thing. White, black, Asian, it didn't matter where you came from, what walk of life you came from, we all saw a public murder, a public lynching of an African-American male by a white cop. So, and to my point, you know, I even like to take the word white off the cop name, you know, and just say that just a cop in general that did not need to be on the force in the first place. Someone that had a history of, injustice toward African-American males. The record that he had in the police force, he should have been fired years ago. So it was just, again, we all saw the same thing. And I think that's why it really brought awareness, more awareness. And like you just said, it really made the athletes, African-American athletes, really stop and take a look at, you know, do I continue to conform to the owners and their policies, or do I take a stand like Kaepernick? It might cost me my job. It might cost me finances. But at the end of the day, you know, I'll have some, I'll be able to sleep at night and I'll have a little bit more clarity in my life because wrong is wrong, right is right. So I think it really woke up the athletes. Obviously, they all started banding together. They realized how much power they had. And they just flat out told the owners that we won't play if there's not an apology. We won't play if things don't change.
Yeah. Somehow or other, at this moment in time, Vincent, that message came through. And I'm contrasting it with the moment in time in the early part of the Trump administration where Trump was ranting and raving against black athletes who took the knee, called them sons of bitches, sent Pence down to Indianapolis so he could walk out of the stadium. Vice President Pence walked out of the stadium. He only went to the game so he could walk out of the game when he saw players take the knee. But something has changed. The reaction back in 2017 where the owners of the NFL teams were saying, well, we may be sympathetic to the notion that police be out of control. We may be sympathetic to that, but as Jerry Jones, the owner of the Dallas Cowboys, said, you're going to toe that line. No knees, toe that line. And the NFL took this stand on that there would be no kneeling. Something changed this time. And Goodell, you're right. Total 180. Like, I respect our players.
Power. Power change.
Talk about that.
The power. The players, you know, I mean, when you have your marquee players taking a stance, being a voice, see, that wasn't happening. And, you know, it's kind of funny, right, if you think about it. It took the younger players who weren't even in the league in Kaepernick, you took a knee, Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, Jackson. These players weren't even in the league, and the turnaround to watch, for them, I think the perspective of them watching what took place as college athletes, and then they're coming into the league. I think they already had their mind made up that, you know, we're not going to allow this to happen. And so this incident with Floyd was clearly a power shift. But the players knew that they had the power, and the owners did not. And that's what changed. You know, they all banded together, and they got on social media, and they reached out to Roger Goodell, and they sent a message. And I don't think it took them an hour and a half to run down in the basement and apologize. To then come back and apologize to Kaepernick. We got it wrong. We was wrong for him. And then he came back with a third one. Owners can, somebody needs to hire Colin Kaepernick back. Now just think about that. You work for an organization or owners, do you think that the people that you work for, you have power over them? Obviously not. But that was the dog and pony show. Roger Goodell telling the guys who pay his check, who writes his check, that pays his salary, hey, y'all need to hire Colin Kaepernick back. Again, you know, a shift in power. And they started to do the dancing instead of the football players. Refreshing. Very refreshing.
I would love to have been a fly on the wall in two instances, Vincent. Back in 2017, a fly on the wall when the owners were convening and meeting to discuss about this issue, and to hear the defiant talk, which I know there was, don't you bend to these players. This is don't you let them tell us how to run our game, you know? And then contrast that talk to whatever Goodell told them this year. You follow me? Like,
yeah.
Gentlemen, go ahead.
Let me say this. I can, so I'm the fly on the wall. The first conversation is what you just said. Guys, we cannot allow this player to kneel at every game. And all it's going to do is cause solidarity. And before you know it, they'll be running the teams We can't allow that to happen. So, as James Baldwin said, let's make an example out of this black man. You know what I wanted to say, the black man.
Yes.
And I think that's what it was. And through the emails and through the conference calls and everything else, clearly this was a blackball situation. And it was in solidarity and unity amongst the owners. And Roger Goodell was, you know, the puppet master orchestrating what the owners wanted. Reverse. Now, Roger Goodell was like, shit. Oh, shit. Listen, guys, we're losing. We're about to lose our top football athlete. Yeah. We've got Patrick Mahomes, which is the MVP of the Super Bowl, and a host of other A-list athletes saying that, hey, they're going to walk. They're not playing. If we do not reverse the decision, if we do not acknowledge Black Lives Does Matter, if we do not acknowledge the police brutality and the injustice that's going on in the United States of America, if we do not denounce President Donald Trump, we're going to be in trouble. And that's what changed. And so the owners, you know, it probably was, you don't know what you're talking about. We're hey guys, you either want to leave or you don't. Make a decision. And they made the right decision.
Well, as
at the wrong time, but yes, they made the right decision.
It took them a long time to make the right decision. And I cannot resist this. I do this all the time. Whenever this conversation comes up, I point out to our Chicago listeners, because we're predominantly a Chicago show, I point out, if you want to realize how fierce the opposition in the NFL was to Colin Kaepernick and to having him in the league after he took that knee, Exhibit A, to prove that point, is that the Chicago Bears paid Mike Glennon $18 million to be quarterback rather than hire Colin Kaepernick. Vincent, I don't know if you're a football fan anymore, if you gave it up a long time ago when you got injured back in college, but let me just tell you this. Mike Glennon is a terrible quarterback. They gave him $18 million because they didn't want to sign Colin Kaepernick. So that's how strong the opposition was to Colin Kaepernick. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Right. And to add to that, let's look at the resume. Man went to the Super Bowl. He took his team to the Super Bowl on his back. A proven winner, a proven Super Bowl quarterback, and yet and still, here this guy is, and I don't even know the name. Let's just say $18 million guy.
Yeah.
Instead of hiring Colin Kaepernick. And so that is Exhibit A. I would like to hear, what's Exhibit B?
Well, Exhibit B, I have to think about Exhibit. I would say Mike Glennon, that's his name, would be Exhibits A, B, C, D, and E. But I'm just speaking as a frustrated Bears fan there. You were talking about what happened in Minnesota and what the world saw. And I sent you an article that I found fascinating. Derek Chauvin is the name of the police officer who actually put his knee on George Floyd's neck. There was a young African-American police officer who was holding down George Floyd, and King is his name. And there was an interesting article in the New York Times. It was a kind of heartbreaking article. This young man was on his third day with the Minneapolis police force, Vincent. His third day.
A rookie.
And he had been trained by Derek Chauvin. And when I read that article, Vincent, and I told you this already. When I read that article, I thought, oh, my God, this is reverse training day. And in the movie Training Day, as you know, Denzel Washington is a corrupt cop who teaches Ethan Hawke. That's right. Isn't that the actor you told me plays the white guy?
Yeah.
Teaches the young kid to be corrupt. And in Minnesota, it was Derek Chauvin who somehow or other they took this young man who was relatively idealistic and had friends who were in the Black Lives Matter movement. His sisters, his siblings were in the Black Lives Matter movement. Somehow or other, they got to him. And Vincent, that was just so profound. It sat with me for a long while that they flipped the guy. Do you understand what I'm saying? They turned him into something that he wasn't.
Right. Right. Exactly. And he was not in, it's the old adage, a code of, that, the police have, or just in general organizations, groups, white supremacists, you name it. I think he was in a no-win situation, being a rookie cop. Uncertainties, had to follow a veteran cop. This is the way we do it. This is the way it's done. If you go against what we do, then you are not one of us. And this is not a black and white thing. This is the code of the police department. When you have certain corrupt cops having the opportunity to train a rookie, which should never happen. So I think this young man, and I'm not making excuses for him, I think he's under a lot of pressure to either conform or, maybe get some accusations, put on him, or distancing the other police officers from him. And so he was in a no-win situation, and you think about it, and it goes back to the NFL. We had these players that wanted to do the right thing, and several players were taking the knee. But when they saw what happened to Kaepernick, their gut feeling was, am I going to be able to feed my family? Am I going to be able to keep my job? And so there's a lot of painful thoughts, a lot of uncertainties when you have to make a decision, even when you know it's not the right decision, but you're making it, in a survival mode of trying to make sure that you can provide for your family. Mm-hmm. And that's a tough dichotomy, but, until you're in those people's shoes, you really don't know. And like I said, for myself, I've been in situations where I had to walk away for something that just wasn't right. And I was okay with that. And everybody's not built for that. I've been blackballed myself in the industry. And take it with a grain of salt. I rebuild, I recreate, and I continue to move. Because you cannot allow these type of people to define who you are. Mm-hmm.
Vincent, I already talked about a paragraph in Tommy Shuba's story today about you, and it said I talked about the U.S. Marine part. The other part of that sentence, where Tom Shuba is identifying you as his Englewood native, Englewood being a community in Chicago, on the south side of Chicago. And I know it must be breaking your heart to see all the violence that's been happening in Chicago over the last couple weeks, the shootings, the carnage, little kids getting shot, getting caught in the middle of crossfire. What's your sense of what Chicago or the state or the country should do to bring down the violence?
It's really a tough call. The leadership here in Chicago, I hear a lot of times, so-called leaders, they'll speak out and say, no, we shouldn't do that. That's, against the ACLU, or that's a human rights issue, et cetera. But, I moved back to Chicago in 93, and every year, every summer that rolls around, this is the norm. In this is the norm because no one wants to take the ownership of, again, attacking and addressing the issue at hand. And I think the issue at hand in the city of Chicago and some other urban cities, when innocent bystanders are getting killed, especially our young babies, you know, and then we just see the, like you said, the malice of behavior and no respect for life. This is domestic terrorist to me. You know, I think that if we call it what it is, you know, on U.S. soil, domestic terrorists, and we address it in that manner, I think we'll clean up a lot of this, a lot of the shootings and murders and the crime that's going on toward innocent bystanders. And at the end of the day, I saw a young man post on social media saying that, you know, this weekend, 4th of July weekend, PSA, make sure you're not letting your kids play out front, not playing on the porch, not playing in the public parks, not playing in the backyards, alleyways, and pretty much the ending almost of like to be safe in the home, because a lot of these murders are happening while people are inside their home, stray bullets. So where do we go? You're not even safe at home. So again, I think that we need to address it for what it is. And, you know, the city of Chicago won't say it. The mayor probably won't say it. But bring the feds in. I mean, at some point in time, you know, it has to stop or history is just going to continue to repeat itself.
Do you
trust... that could have been...
Go ahead, finish your thought.
Go ahead.
Do you trust the feds under Donald Trump?
Could you repeat that again?
Yes, I said at some point they have to maybe bring the feds in. And I said, do you trust the feds under Donald Trump?
That's tough. You know, when you say it like that, my initial reaction would be no. But again, where do we go? What we're doing now is not working. So I trust another alternative. I do trust that. And I trust that, you know, people in a leadership position will do the right thing. I mean, community, families out here in the city of Chicago, if you know who the shooters are, do the right thing. It could have been your son. It could have been your grandbaby. It could have been your little brother, sister. I mean, we cannot allow these people to continue to terrorize the neighborhoods. At some point, you know, in whether it's Inglewood, Gresham, other neighborhoods in Chicago, we have to stand up. But it's not just a South Side and West Side issue. It is a Chicago issue. So, you know, the people on the north side, the people downtown, we're all affected by this. You know, every time innocent life is taken, we all going to share the brunt of this in some way, some form, some fashion. And we just have to address the issue. You know, poverty is violence. A young man said that once, and it's true. We got to get people, you know, we got to uplift our people in the community. We got to obviously start getting these people out of poverty, encouraging them, getting them more jobs, more opportunities, and that would help as well. But, you know, evil is evil. They have a long history. It's not going anywhere. I mean, going away anytime soon, but we can address it. We can, you know, work toward diffusing it and whatever it takes. You know, like Malcolm X says, at this point, by any means necessary, we have to get the shooters off the streets, because I'm tired of looking at the news. I'm tired of picking up the paper and seeing a 3-year-old boy shot and killed. I got a 3-year-old grandson. Could have been my grandson. You know, a lot of pain.
Let's try.
We have to work to do better.
Yeah, let's try to end the conversation on a little more of an upbeat note. I'm looking at your picture, and there's no way a man this young and good looking could be a grandfather. So just thought I'd throw that out at you, Vincent. Again, the picture of Vincent in today's Bright One in the Sun Times on Thomas Shuba's story. Vincent, before I let you go, you're a big basketball fan. You worked for the Jordan brand several years ago, so you know the game pretty well. Do you think there will be an NBA bubble season in July? Do you think the NBA is going to pull back in the face of the coronavirus?
I definitely, you know, I believe that there would not be an NBA season like they would like to have. I think the commissioner is kidding himself if he thinks that the NBA players or the NBA itself is immune to what has already been a dismal sports year with, you know, Major League Baseball not even playing a game yet. They just resumed it back soccer, but that's at a very cautious pace. So to gather all these people down there in Orlando, Florida, which, you know, the particular the state that's just had a huge spike in coronavirus patients. I just think that these guys are not looking at protecting not only the players, but staff, other people that work for these organizations in general, you know, trainers, reporters, the media, because they're going to have to go down there and cover. And so I just think the right thing to do is, again, to just let this season be what it is, an ending, and move on to 2021 NBA season. Yeah. But, you know, money's involved, you know, ESPN, and everybody's, you know, pushing toward it, you know, and not looking at the welfare of the player or, again, the staff or the media itself. So we'll see how it play out. But I don't think there's going to be an ending to the NBA or them crowning a champion. That's just my opinion. And I go with that based off of what the physicians, the medical people are saying right now.
Yeah, Adam Silver, the commissioner, seemed to be backtracking a little bit today. I saw the comments that you alluded me to, and I read them before we went on the air. Yeah, a little bit of backtracking there, perhaps, you know, suggesting that you're right and they may call it off. Vincent, thanks so much for taking the time to come talk to me. It's the second time you've been on the show, and we'll bring you back again.
Thank you.
All right, very good.
It was a pleasure. Thank you very much.
That's Vincent Norman. I'm Ben Jarofsky. Take care, everyone.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.